listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, talking about all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66-200, or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800, and you can email patrick102fm@gmail.com. Any tech-related questions, I'll get back to you on the next show. We actually have a question starting off from Jared in Newcastle West. He said, with the restrictions being lifted and things being opened up again, he was thinking of getting into DJing, and what would he need to get to set up first? So I suppose that it depends on the type of DJing you're going to be doing. You know, if you're lucky enough to get a job in a nightclub or something that has a full setup there already, you might need much, maybe just like your laptop with your software on it, or they might have it all set up already. You know, they might have a whole subscription system with, like, you know, a Spotify type one for DJs. I think Virtual DJ has their own one, like an online setup, where you have a full setup of music, where you can just type in the name of pretty much any kind of song and it'll pop up and you can play it. You can drag and drop it into the software and mix it up. So if it's that, you might need a whole lot, but not many people are it's mostly mobile DJs, I suppose, out there. And with mobile DJs, you would need... to start off with, you can start off with, like, depends on the size of kind of venues you're going to be doing as well. Starting off, I suppose, more than likely, you'll be doing maybe smaller venues. So you wouldn't need as big a setup when it comes to speakers. So start off with, I suppose, a laptop with your library of music. I definitely recommend to have a lot of downloaded music. You know, because if you're going to different venues, there's a good chance a lot of these venues might not have internet access, high enough speed internet access to keep streaming songs. And the last thing you want is like very slow internet pickup and you're trying to play music and things like that. That wouldn't work out too well. Music getting stuck. So a good downloaded library of music, a USB DJ controller for your computer, so, and a software to go with that. You know, there's lots of different, there's Traktor, there's Virtual DJ Pro, and a controller can help you to control the music that you have on the screen. Now, you could work without the controller. Do you know, if you wanted to go a basic setup, you can work with a mouse and with a keyboard to drag and drop the songs. Most people prefer to use a controller because you can have all the buttons, the loops and all that stuff. Some of the buttons on the more modern ones are customizable, so you can have loops and you can have settings, setups and stuff built into them. But a DJ controller, where you'd have your crossfader and you'd have all your loops, buttons, and the ways to change to cue songs up and to mix songs together, to change the BPMs to match each other and things like that. So that'd be how you'd coordinate your music. And after that, then you need an amplifier. So the amplifier would always be and speakers. So you can get basic PA speakers. There's speakers with the amplifiers built into them, or there's speakers where you get the amplifier separate. There's speakers where they kind of have a couple of speakers in them. They have like a low down, a bigger one for bass, and they have small like tweeters on top to get the higher end sound. Or some people have like bass bins, which would put out all the bass, obviously, and the smaller speakers on top that would put the higher end, because it's all about moving air. So bass is a low down sound, so it needs bigger speakers to move the air around. So when it comes to higher end sound, high pitch sound, it only needs smaller speakers. So yeah, you'd often see like big speakers on the ground with like a pole coming out of it and a smaller speaker on top. So the one on the ground would be doing the bass, and the higher up one would be doing the mids and highs and things like that. So yeah, that'd be it. Say if you were doing a kind of a handy size pub, I suppose. You'd have your computer with your music on it. You'd have your DJ controller, and you'd have all the cabling you need, of course, connected to an amplifier and a couple of speakers off of that then as well. Yeah, as I say, in the configuration, one of those configurations. I suppose most people start off with the just two speakers, where you'd have the bass speaker and the tweeters built into them. So you'd have they'd be all ready to go. So you'd put you'd have stands for the speakers. I'd always recommend to get speakers with higher capacity than your amplifier, because you don't want to have, you know, a 2,000 watt amplifier powering 200-300 watt speakers, because there's a good chance you can blow the speaker. So definitely better to have a 1,000 watt amplifier with 2,000 watt speakers, you know, because even if you need to turn it up to the loudest, you're not going to blow the speakers, you know. To have you should always have more capacity in your speakers. Yeah, so that'd be the most basic. And then after that, you can start to add lighting, you can add smoke machines, you can add all the other bits and pieces. There's DJ supply shops, there's websites, all kinds of everywhere, and most DJs piece things together from here and there. So, yeah, that'd be a good way to get started anyway. I'd recommend to have, even if it's a cheaper one, to have a laptop that's kind of purpose for DJs, like only for DJing, and have like almost nothing else on it, because you're fighting for CPU space, and DJing takes up a lot of CPU capacity. So as good a one as you could get just for DJing. I noticed, you know, some DJs that have their own personal laptops, which would be very high spec and do a great job of running the software, but they're afraid that there could be other things running in the background, and they have lots of stuff installed on their own laptops, and they could be eating up the CPU space, and all of a sudden you'd see on one of the softwares that would give you a meter of, and all of a sudden your CPU is up to 99%, 98%, 100%, and all of a sudden songs are stuttering and stopping, and you don't want that to happen. So even a slightly cheaper laptop or desktop, if you have it built into a rack or something, but laptop is probably the handiest, or tablets. A lot of DJs actually use tablets with not a lot on it, just running your DJ software, and maybe even have an external drive or have a second drive. Say maybe an SSD drive would be good for that, actually. If you had a laptop with an SSD drive running the software, and maybe a HDD drive built in as well, a normal hard drive that has the storage of your music. So a lot of laptops nowadays have them, so it's very handy you can install your software on the SSD drive and have that to run the software. So there's a better chance it won't get stuck in the middle of a gig. Also, when you're setting up a laptop or anything like that, you need a lot of time, you need to install a virtual audio cable, because do you ever notice if you're trying to, say, you're doing an interview or something on a, or trying to record audio from both sides, so say if you ring somebody on Zoom or Skype or something like that, and you try to record, it'll only record you and you won't have the other person. So you need to certain sound cards built in on higher end computers will do it automatically, but other ones then, also the software built into your interface or your mixer, your DJ controller might have some software built into that, or if your mixer has a USB input, if it's a USB plug-in one rather than just a headphone jack or something, it might have software to come with it to act as a second sound card. But otherwise, you might have to, say if you're just using a headphone jack, you might have to install a virtual audio cable so you can play two songs at the same time, you know, mix one song into the next and things like that. Or ASO, I never heard it pronounced, I've always only seen it written as AISO. There's ASO for All, is there like free software that you can install that will help to use, that will complement your DJ software, whether it's Hercules or Virtual DJ or whatever different ones you install on your computer to go with your DJ controller. They're all good in their own way, you know, a lot of these ones. I've tried a few of them. I suppose Virtual DJ would be the most popular one, but there's lots of ones that go with the controllers and things like that, and they're very custom and they do a good job. So yeah, that'd be the basic setup, Jared, for getting into DJing as, you know, things are opening up again. So best of luck with your future in DJing, and if I ever attend one of your gigs, you can play a request for me. Anyway, let's get to some of the latest in tech. The Google Pixel 6 first look. So Google have a new camera out, or new phone out. It's the Pixel 6 first look. The Tensor chip. So Google now are making their own chips. They're not using Snapdragon chips and things like that. They're making their own one. So it'll be interesting to see how they get on. You know, people are saying that this could be... the fact that they're making their own software, that they'll make the software to go with the chip like Apple does, and it could be more efficient and things like that. The Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro mark a significant step towards competing with the premium phones from Apple, Samsung, and Huawei. No, I don't know. I think they have been doing that. Like, they put camera technology more forward than anybody in the last maybe 10 years with the first Pixel phone and the first few with the camera technology and the way that they can blend pictures together to make higher end photos and things like that. So I think they have been. I think that's not very fair. The new Google Pixel 6 and Pixel 6 Pro showcase one of the biggest year-to-year phone upgrades it's seen in a long time. In a lead up to Google's fall Pixel event on Tuesday, the company behind Android and YouTube did something many other phone makers don't and announced both phones back in August. The Pixel 6 has new camera hardware, runs on Google's first in-house processor, and has a design that looks like any other phone, that looks unlike any other phone sold today. The Pixel 6 series is an important release for Google because it's a big shift away from the company's pleasant mid-tier phone strategy of the past, and a significant step towards a portfolio designed to compete with premium phones like Apple, Samsung, and Huawei. Yeah, price-wise, I think this article is like, if you're not charging enough money, it's not good enough. I go the exact opposite way. I'm like, I'd recommend to try to write down all the specs you want that are in the higher end phones and try to get it for half the price by shopping around and, you know, looking through some of the lesser known brands and things like that, because there's a lot of quality phones out there nowadays. There isn't as many, especially if you're getting, you know, all these parts are interchangeable, you know, like Snapdragon process. Say, if you have you know, all the parts are just this. Most of these companies are just buying parts from all the other companies and assembling them. So regardless of brand, if you get a phone with like the Snapdragon 888, if you have, is it Samsung makes most of the screens for the phones? If you have a Samsung OLED screen with, you know, 2K, you have a 6,000 milliamp-hour battery, you have a 64 megapixel camera with some decent hardware, you have kind of a version of Google that isn't messed around with too much. You know, it's as close to clean Android software as possible, and you know, fast charging and things like that. Regardless of the name, it's going to be a pretty decent phone. You know, same thing with like a good quality body on the outside and things like that. The glass frame or aluminium frame and glass back in front. And, you know, if you can tick all the boxes, you know, and I've tested this over the last few years because all the phones I've bought aren't available in shops. Over the my last probably six phones, you can't buy in shops here in normal phone shops. And the last four have all been very good phones, you know. So there is a way to get the high specs that you want, to tick all the boxes, but pay half the price of, you know, going to your phone shop and, you know, give me the highest end Android or highest end app. Well, Apple, you can't do it, but the highest end Android will say that you can get. So Google were doing that to a certain extent. They had pretty good specs. Obviously they did cut back a bit because they weren't trying to do the flagship killer, but they did have a very good camera from the, and yeah, it all depends what you're looking for too. But anyway, the new Google Pixel, of the two phones, the $599, probably €599 as well, Pixel 6 is the most affordable model. It's priced to compete with the, see, that's not overly expensive, but it is the entry level one, so I don't know what's the difference in specs between the entry level one and the highest one. You know, I know the likes of the Samsung Galaxy and the Ultra are more than ever now have, like, especially camera wise. One is like, I don't know, is it like 48 megapixel, and one has like the 120 megapixel. So if you're looking for a camera, the standard, there's a massive difference between the standard Samsung Galaxy and the Ultra one. So I don't know if it's the same with this, with the new Google Pixel phones. Is the more affordable model. It's priced to compete with iPhone 13 and Samsung Galaxy S21 and other mid-tier Android phones such as the current Motorola Edge. Google used 100% recycled aluminium for the Pixel body, or for the body of the Pixel 6. The sides have a matte finish and overall the Pixel 6 has an IP68 rating for water and dust resistance. The Pixel's defining feature is its horizontal camera bump strip. It would be easy to say the camera strip was inspired by RoboCop's visor or the visor of Cylons from Battlestar Galactica. But Google says it wanted to make a unique camera bump that celebrates the camera's system. So instead of a square in the corner, they went for a strip going all the ways across the phone. In person, it looks like a piece of a black mineral that has been cut, shaped and polished into a camera bump that keeps your phone level so it doesn't wobble. The camera bump houses wide and ultra-wide cameras. That's a good idea, actually. I like that, yeah, the strip. Yeah, because even my own phone has the camera bump in the corner, and it has, well, I have a cover on it, so it doesn't wobble too much, but if I didn't have the cover on, yeah, it would be, it protrudes in one corner, so the camera is uneven. I'd prefer to have the cameras in the middle, even. On the front of the Pixel 6 is a 6.4-inch display covered in Gorilla Glass Victus with an under-display fingerprint reader. The screen has a 90Hz refresh rate, which should make animations look smooth and feel more. Now, there is up to 140 now in some of the phones, so it's not the highest end of refresh rates, but it's fine. Yeah, I had a 90Hz refresh rate phone last. I have 120Hz now, and I cannot tell the difference. They're both like lightning fast, snappy, you know. I can tell no difference whatsoever. I'd be very surprised if quizzed independently, people could tell the difference. The brains of the new Pixel don't come from Qualcomm. Instead, the phone's powered by a brand new chip called Tensor. It's the first processor designed by Google, and it's been custom made for the Pixel. Google said it's 80% faster than a Qualcomm Snapdragon 765. From last year's Pixel 5. Google wanted to go further with software and computation and hence created the Tensor chip. As much as the camera bump strip defines the design, the Tensor chip defines the Pixel. It allows for on-device AI like faster, more accurate speech recognition and image processing. The person who wrote this article for CNET asked about the possibility of seeing a Tensor chip in other devices, and while Google declined to comment, the company did say that this was not a one-off. The Pixel 6 camera gets better skin as skin tones with real tone. The main camera on the Pixel 6 has a wide-angle lens and a 50-megapixel sensor, which is the largest ever in a Pixel camera. The camera uses pixel binning to combine multiple pixels together to create a 12.5 megapixel photo. The results are brighter photos with better detail and more accurate colors. Google claims the new main camera can capture 150% more light than the main camera on the Pixel 5. There's a new ultra-wide camera with a 12-megapixel sensor and a 114-degree field of view around the front. There's an 8-megapixel selfie camera. But if there's one thing Google Pixel cameras are known for, it's software and computational photography. Google designed the Pixel cameras and computations to be more accurate no matter your complexion with real tone. For the past 18 months, Google has partnered with directors, photographers and cinematographers known for beauty depictions of communities of colour. The idea was to improve the Pixel cameras' algorithms in two ways. The first is detection. They wanted the phone to be able to identify a face no matter how light or dark someone's skin is and how complex the lighting is. The second part is working with engineers to improve the aesthetics of how photos were rendered. Android 12 and other notable software additions for the Pixel 6. Pixel 6 runs Android 12, which offers more customization around preferences and aesthetics. Pixel 6 versus Pixel 6 Pro, all the differences. Okay. The two phones Google launched Tuesday are similar in a number of ways, but there are differences that set them apart. Perhaps the largest difference is the price. The smaller one is $599 and the Pixel 6 Pro is $899. So what else is the difference? I'm seeing them here side by side. So the camera bumps, like the phone is standing up and the bottom part of the phone is exactly the same size pretty much. The camera bump starts at the same place and is almost the same size. And it's the part above the camera bump is bigger on the Pixel 6. They just increase the part above the bump on the back. So yeah, there's like a smaller ledge above the camera bump on the smaller one and a bigger one on the Pro. The screen on the Pixel 6 has 6.4 inches full HD plus high rate refresh rate display that can switch between 90 and 60 hertz. The 6 Pro has a larger 6.7 inch quad H display, LTPO, that's low temperature polycrystalline oxide, that can adapt the refresh rate between 10 hertz and 120 hertz. The display on the Pro curves over the sides of the phone. If that was me now, it wouldn't, full HD 90 hertz would be fine. That wouldn't push me to get the Pro version. So let's see what else there is in terms of cameras. The Pro has a 48 megapixel camera, 4x optical zoom. I do like a bit of optical zoom. That's already like, okay, I like the Pro now. Telephoto camera. The Pixel 6 doesn't. The Pixel 6 has an 8 megapixel front facing camera and 84 degree field of view that can record 1080p video at 30 frames per second. The Pro has an 11 megapixel selfie camera with a wider 94 degree field of view that can record 4K 30 frames per second videos. The back of the Pro has Gorilla Glass Victus and the Pixel 6 has Gorilla Glass 6. The Pixel 6 Pro has an ultra-wideband chip and the Pixel 6 doesn't. The Pro has ultra-wideband chip for picking up signals, so the phone calls mightn't drop out as easily and things like that, I presume. Pixel 6 has a 4.6 milliamp hour battery and the Pro has a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. The 6 supports sub-6 and millimeter 5G wave. Oh, so both of them. The 6 Pro supports both sub-6 and the Pixel 6 supports a sub-6 5G. More expensive carrier version also supports millimeter wave. So they both do both? Is that what it's trying to say? So that's the differences between the two new Pixel phones. TV prices are the highest they've been in the last 9 years. Oh, actually, I have a story. So last Sunday, my dad rang me in the morning and he said his TV in the kitchen was gone dead. So I went over to his house and I was having a look and tried a few different things, plugged it in different places and tried to hold in the power button or plug it out and leave it out for a couple of minutes and plug it back in again and do different. And never know, it was dead. But it was an old TV. It used to be my TV years ago, and my brother had it, and then my dad had it. So it had definitely earned its cost price anyway. So So we went to Limerick to into one of the big retail stores to buy another TV. So it was like a 43-inch TV. Brought it home, put it up, set it up, the wall mount, put it up on the wall, and then there was like a D, like a capital D shape in the top left corner of missing pixels. And, it, you know, it's like little dots missing. So whatever you do, you can see it there. And like, you know, if you know anything about pixels, is that they start, they, once one goes, they can grow, and then all of a sudden you have a whole line going down your TV. So like, and anyway, you know, it's a brand new TV, you don't want that to happen. So the next day my brother took it back in, because I was working or whatever, this was Monday then, and my brother was around, so he took it back in and got another TV, the same TV, a replacement, showed him what was wrong, and they said, oh, fine, no problem, gave him another one, went back home, and then set it up again, went to set it up, same thing in the same place, and it was a different TV. So then he went back in again, and showed it to them and said they were offering to give him another one. So he said, okay, I'll take another one, but I want you to take it out of the box, plug it in, and show me that the pixels aren't missing from the corner. So because it was the same, yeah, the same in the same place. So they opened up a box in front of him. They pulled out the TV and put it up on a table, plugged it in. Same thing. The pixels missing. So it must be a fault in the batch, or the way it was packaged, or something that squeezed against the screen, or some way they were manufactured, or something that went wrong. But yeah, three TVs in a row, all with the same, like a capital D shape in the top left corner, a fault in the screen. So he ended up just getting his cash back, because the whole batch was bad, and he bought another TV somewhere else, and actually only paid a few quid more, and he got a 50-inch TV. So it all worked out good in the end, but yeah, that was an adventure. Yeah, TV prices are the highest they've been in the last 9 years. The cost of parts and shipping are up in 2021, which could lead to fewer doorbusters than normal this Black Friday. But like, bargains can still be got. Do you know, like maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I shopped around and one of the online sellers, I got, with free delivery, I got a 65-inch TV for €470. 4K TV. Now, it doesn't have, you know, fancy, like, it doesn't have Android software. It's still 60 hertz refresh rate. It's pretty good. It's a good panel, but that's all I wanted. I have a surround sound system, so I don't need fantastic speakers. I have, like, a PS5, so I don't need fancy software all built in, you know. So all I needed was a fairly good screen. So it was actually a Toshiba TV. So for €470 for a 65-inch TV is fantastic. So I thought that was very good bargain that I got. And it's been great ever since. I haven't had a bother out of it. But, yeah, so it can be, even though the prices have gone up, the you can still get bargains. It's just maybe harder to get now, or less often, or... But I think the thing you need is patience, you know, to don't like, I have to buy one now straight away kind of thing, if you want a good bargain. But unless you see something straight away and you have an idea about the prices and shop around. The holiday buying season is nearly upon us, and TV shopping is about to kick into high gear again. The time of year TV prices typically fall a lot as retailers and manufacturers compete for your big screen euro. But there is something different about TVs in 2021, and I'm not talking about 8K resolution or OLED versus QLED or the latest streaming features. Pricing right now on TVs is the highest since at least 2012, said Stephen Baker, Vice President of Industry Analytics at NPD Group. Christmas pricing overall is likely to be at least €100 above normal. Last year, the average price of a TV was €363 during the fourth quarter, which is fairly typical over the last few years. This year, our forecast is the average price to be approximately €500. For a lot of shoppers, a €500 TV sounds pretty affordable, but that's the average of every TV. The majority are entry-level models with small screens and modest features that bring down the average. A glance at Amazon's list of best-selling TVs, for example, reveals most models in the 32 to 43-inch range with prices well below €500. So the prices are going up. Sales of TVs over €1,500 are at a record level, and sales of TVs of 75 inches and above are performing much better than the overall market, says Baker. Quick takeaway, if you're in the market for a cheap TV, prepare to pay more than in the recent past. Conversely, there should be plenty of good deals on mid-range and higher-end models. And they seem to put it down to chips, ships and automobiles. Just like other technology segments such as cars, the components that go into TVs are more expensive this year. So it's another thing about the chip shortage. It's affecting everything. Several manufacturers asked to point out pointed to the chip shortage and cost of LCD panels and other guts, but another big factor was the higher cost of shipping. So semiconductors, copper, chemicals, glass, for TCL North America, they said that was some of their problems, and the global supply chain, a complex system that transports products around the world, have intensified during the pandemic and will continue in the run-up to Christmas. So that's what's going on there, with the price of TVs going up the same as a lot of other computer parts and car parts and things like that. A first look at Microsoft's new Windows 11 Android app support. So there's a video on The Verge about Windows 11 Android apps. First look, if you want to see that on YouTube. Microsoft has released the first preview version of its Android apps support in Windows 11. It's available to testers on the beta channel version of Windows 11, which means you'll need to opt into the Windows Insider program to get access. I've installed a preview version on two systems, a gaming rig with a Core i9 11900K and Microsoft Surface X Pro, to get a real feel for exactly how Android apps will run on Windows 11. The experience of installing apps is very simple. Microsoft has partnered with Amazon, so the Microsoft Store will list apps, but send you over to Amazon's App Store app to get them installed or updated. This also installs a Windows subsystem for Android in the background, which is the core technology that powers Android apps running Windows 11. Apps effectively run in a virtual machine contained within their own world, but are able to sit side by side with your other Windows apps. You can pin Android apps to the start menu or taskbar and use them. Use all of them windowing and multitasking features of Windows 11, just like a regular desktop app. While there are only 50 apps officially available in the preview, I was able to install Amazon's Kindle app, the BBC Sounds app, and a bunch of games to test how well the Windows 11 handles mobile games. So he goes on to say that both of his machines were able to handle the games pretty well. So that's a way to set up in Windows 11. You'll be able to set up Android apps to run. So that's pretty cool. Elon Musk's Boring Company gets the green light for a Las Vegas tunnel system, a citywide version of Teslas and tunnels. Elon Musk's Boring Company just won approval from local officials to move forward with building a network of vehicle tunnels underneath Las Vegas, dubbed the Vegas Loop. The system will allow passengers to hitch rides in Teslas to and from places like the hotel casinos in the Las Vegas Strip, the city's new football stadium, and the Las Vegas Convention Center and McCarran International Airport. The Boring Company already operates a small version of this Tesla's tunnel system underneath the Las Vegas Convention Center, which opened earlier this year and involves a 0.8-mile tunnel. But Musk's startup proposed a massive citywide expansion in December 2020. That largely lines up with the Clark County officials approved on Wednesday. The system that was approved involves 29 miles of tunnels and 51 stations. Clark County said as many as 57,000 passengers will be able to travel through it per hour, and that no taxpayer money will be spent to build it. So that's pretty cool. So you can just hop in on one side of Las Vegas and get taken in a electric car through an underground tunnel and out the other side of Las Vegas, so helping to avoid congestion and things like that. And I suppose that's the benefit of electric vehicles. They don't have emissions and smoke and everything, so they can drive in tunnels fairly safely. That was the problem before. Like when they were building the London Underground, they had to allow for gaps for it to go overground in parts and stuff, or to have openings for to let the smoke out and things like that of when it was made originally. As far as I can remember, I was watching a document. That could be a different train, but as far as I can remember, that might have been the New York subway system. I just remember one of them anyway. They had to allow openings for steam or smoke to get out. So, and that's the benefits of electric cars, that you don't have any emissions. So that's pretty cool. Hyper's new 245 watt USB-C battery pack and charger are here to help charge all your gear at once. You can charge two laptops, a tablet, and a smartphone off one battery pack. So this is just a big rechargeable battery that you can plug in. Hyper have announced a pair of over-the-top USB-C accessories, Hyperjuice 245-watt USB-C battery pack, and Hyperjuice's 245-watt USB-C GAN charger, each of which offers four USB ports for charging all of your gadgets at once. So yeah, there's a picture here with two laptops, a tablet, and a phone being all charged off of one of these chargers. So, despite the big 245 watt in names here, neither of these new chargers nor the new battery pack uses the recently released USB-C PD 3.1 spec that enables charging up to 240 watt. Rather, the number refers to the total combined wattage of the new products that can put out across the four total ports. Each port still maxes out at 100 watts though, 100 watts each. So, which means you won't be able to use it for the 140 watt fast charging on the new 16 inch MacBook Pro, for example. Okay, but will it still work, just not fast charging it, or does it only work on the fast charger? I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe it won't work at all on it, but that's still incredibly powerful though. So the government needs to clamp down on smoking areas if it wants to eliminate the habit completely. That's according to the Tobacco Free Institute, who say it welcomes the fact that daily smoking is down 9%, but says more needs to be done. It's a hard one to know. You know, you want people to have their freedom to make their own choices about things. You know, if that's, you know, should we ban alcohol as well? Because alcohol can be bad for people. And I suppose alcohol could be done in moderation, and smoking is kind of always bad. But look, it's people's own choice at the end of the day. I suppose the best thing is, you know, recommend people, show them the health and let them make up their own minds. Director General of the group, Professor Luke Clancy, says smoking areas are attractive for teenagers.
These outside areas, people congregate out there. And what's worrying me is that we've recently surveyed young people, and smoking for the first time in 25 years has gone up in 16-year-olds.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, you don't want smoking to go up. You know, there was a good pattern there for the last, you know, maybe 10 years where smoking was going down. In younger people, you didn't see it as often as well, and it was great. But yeah, it's you don't want to do anything to discourage new people from taking up smoking. That's the last thing you want. National Slowdown Day is in effect until early tomorrow morning. The joint campaign by the Gardaí and the Road Safety Authority is appealing to drivers to reduce their speed and be extra aware of the roads. Speeding on rural roads is being targeted, with 4 in 5 fatalities this year happening on them. Garda Superintendent Thomas Murphy says most of those killed were behind the wheel.
56% of those are drivers, vehicle drivers, that have been killed in these collisions. So far this year, you know, we've had 140,000 drivers detected speeding in excess of the speed limit. And when we ran a similar operation back in March this year, over the 24-hour period, we just under 1,000 detections for excessive speeding.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of there's still, despite the lot of people not driving as often, you know, in the last year or so as they used to, there's still a lot of deaths on the road. So yeah, and I know cars are getting safer and things like that, but it's important to not use excessive speed, especially on dangerous roads, and people taking chances as well, passing blindly on corners and taking corners too quickly and things like that. They're definitely, you know, the speed limit is lower on narrow country roads for a reason. It's costing €4 million to send carbon dioxide monitors to every school in the country to prevent the spread of COVID. The Department of Education started delivering 35,000 monitors at the end of August to check ventilation in classrooms. Primary schools are getting up to 20 each, and secondary schools are receiving up to 35. Dr. Dennis McCauley from the Irish Medical Organisation supports the rollout of monitors.
Having a high level of carbon dioxide in a room can induce you to be just a little bit tired. The quality of air is poor, but more importantly, it will actually help alert the teacher and the pupils that the quality of air isn't good and that there has to be more movement of air in and out of the room to ensure that we minimise the spread of this virus.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of things. There was a lot of things that I suppose should have been done a while ago, but these things take time to set up and things like that. So, you know, somebody was saying that some things won't be set up for another year or two. So, the pandemic could be over and everything by the time a lot of these. But there's no harm anyway to monitor ongoing going forward anyway, and have cleaner air in classrooms is good anyway. Fresh air and cleaner air helps maybe kids to be more alert and things like that. And for less general, you know, you often hear of kids coming home from school with flus and colds over the years anyway, so it might help to prevent a bit of that going forward. So there's no harm with that. Consumers are being warned not to take chances when shopping for Christmas. The Competition and Consumer Protection Commission says the advice follows concerns of stock shortages and delays because of the pandemic and Brexit. The CCPC says there are ideal circumstances for rogue traders, online and in-store, to take advantage of consumers who are having trouble getting a particular product or toy. It's urging shoppers to always buy from reputable retailers, pay securely, watch out for exclusive five-star reviews, and to take the item and to check the items as soon as they arrive. Yeah, well, I found out with the TV the other day. Make sure you check the item to make sure it's okay. Yeah, a lot of you often see these products with like all 5-star reviews and all glowing reviews and no negative whatsoever, or it just looks a bit suspicious sometimes. So yeah, exactly, you'd want to watch out for those kind of things. The International Federation of the Photographic Industry. We're apparently listening to more and more music than we were in 2019. Phonographic industry. We're apparently listening to more music than we were in 2019. A report found that people are spending 18.4 hours a week playing their favourite songs, up from 18 hours 2 weeks ago. The findings suggest music provided enjoyment and happiness to 87% of us during the pandemic. Ah, yeah, it's always nice to like listen a bit of nice music. Protesters have been demonstrating outside Netflix in Los Angeles over a comedy special, which they say ridicules trans people. They're angry about a stand-up show by Dave Chappelle, which activists and some employees at the streaming giant are condemning as being transphobic. But Netflix says the show doesn't cross the line on hate and will remain on the streaming service. Yeah, so I actually watched that, and I think it kind of, you know, he says some things that are like jokes towards trans people, but he says jokes towards everybody, you know. But he tells a story about a friend of his that was a trans person, and it kind of, in the end, I think it's actually the opposite. You know, the person died and he was extremely upset over it, and, you know, said how great a person they were, and they were a comedian, how funny they were and everything. And so I think it was the opposite, but in the end it was the opposite, you know. But he did say some jokes along, you know, that maybe some people were offended by, but I think that's how comedy goes. I think comedy kind of offends sometimes, and a good comedian will offend everybody equally, you know. That's the old joke that they said, that the best comedians offend everybody equally. So But Netflix says the show doesn't cross the line of hate. Oh, yes, I said that. Drag Race's Eureka O'Hara was angry about the counter-protest by some comic supporter. Oh, so, yeah. So there's a person going to be talking about this. But I saw the counter-protest was actually a few of Dave Chappelle supporters and other comedians that went along. And they were chanting, like, you know, jokes are funny. We support Dave, and so I saw some of that. They were classing with each other, and so let's see what Drag Race's Eureka O'Hara has to say.
I don't think that they understand what they're doing, but they are promoting and causing hate conversation, and also allowing people to think that it's okay to discriminate against those trans and non-binary individuals.
Yeah, no, such there should never be hate, you know, and it shouldn't be hate, you know. But there's a difference between hate and comedy. Do you know, comedy is actually kind of the opposite of hate. It's kind of normalizing and taking the stigma away that people might have had stigma towards trans people or find it an actual phobia, as they call it, transphobia. And I think comedy helps to normalize and, you know, everybody to be equal and, you know, not to be thought of as strange or not to be thought of as different. You know, that's what happened over the years. You know, that's going back to the old comedians in the 60s and what they were joking about back then. It has become more normal now, you know. So that's that. The last one is Donald Trump is launching a new social media platform after he was banned from Facebook and Twitter. The former US president says he'll instead share his thoughts with the world on a new site called Truth Social. Guests will be invited to start testing in November before its launch next year. That's going to be very difficult, you know. A lot of the current social media platforms have kind of baked in followers. Now a lot, you know, those big ones before that kind of Bebo and other ones that kind of disappeared. But it's very hard nowadays. They've gotten smarter about it, you know. The likes of Google, if a new company emerges and it's actually being successful, Google or Amazon or them will just buy them out, you know. So it's getting harder for new ones. But there's been a lot of new ones tried to start up, and some of them were, what was the one, there was one of them had the servers running on Amazon, and they just, Amazon pulled the servers and shut them down. A new social media platform that was starting to take off, I forget the name of it, it just shows, you know, they've completely eliminated it. I can't even remember the name, but yeah, there have been a couple of them. There's still a few ongoing, but a few different personalities and celebrities have tried to set up different social media platforms, and none of them have worked so far to have really taken off. I think it's the ease of use. You know, the likes of Twitter is very easy to use. Now, Instagram, I find it the opposite. I've heard it hard to use, but Instagram is different. Facebook is easy to use and easy to navigate, but I'm just not a big fan of it anymore. I kind of gone off of Facebook, but yeah, it's the whole setup and ease of use and things like that. Like, people have tried to set up alternative video platforms as well, but it's the ease of use of YouTube. It's easy to search. It's well organized. It's easy to navigate. The videos play well even in slow internet places. So they're, obviously their servers are very fast. So it's hard to set up. I'd be very surprised if his Truth Social would take off. I suppose some of Trump's hardcore fans will take it up, but I'd be very surprised. You never know. He might have good software engineers working on it, and it might be very easy to use, easy to register, set up a profile, and it works well. And so I'd be very surprised. A lot of others with a lot of money as well have tried setting up different social medias, and it's not as easy as it seems. And people are used to what they're used to as well, and you can't exactly copy the successful ones because you'll get in trouble for copyright theft. So yeah, but that's our tech news for this week. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll be back with you again next week. As always, you can call 069-66-200. Any tech-related questions I can answer for you in the next show. Or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. Or you can email patrick102fm at gmail.com, and you can send anything tech-related, and I'll get back to you on the next show. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the show. I'll talk to you again next week. Peace.
You're listening to Dig Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.